This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte is the second fastest growing city in the country, and developers are scrambling to keep up. A combination of that rapid growth and the desire among young people to live close to the downtown core has resulted in thousands of apartment units being built in South End, Elizabeth, Noda, and elsewhere. These apartments are usually in mid-rise buildings, some taking up an entire city block. Now, we're talking about 10,000 units here with more to come, and that means a lot of apartment buildings. And because of their sheer number, those buildings are having an impact on the look of our city, and that impact will last for many years into the future. There is a group of people who worry about this. Some of them are architects. They see a sameness, a blandness in all these apartments. They view many of these projects as uninspired, even ugly, and they are exploring ways to change all this. Civic by Design has an architect as its director. Their mission is to elevate the quality of our region's built environment and to promote public participation in the creation of a more beautiful region for all. A Civic by Design forum takes place tonight at the Levine Museum of the New South. And in advance of that, we're going to hear some of their ideas on what might be done to put some variety back into the design of the city. Tom Lowe is an internationally recognized award-winning leader in new urbanism, whose work includes plans for new villages, neighborhoods, and towns in the U.S., Canada, Scotland, England, and Panama. He's also director of Civic by Design and founder of their monthly forum, and just cycled off the Charlotte Planning Commission. Welcome back.
Thanks to be here.
David Furman is a Charlotte native, architect and principal in two architectural firms specializing in multifamily housing, Axiom Architecture and the Housing Studio. He also founded Centro City Works, which focused on the development of urban mixed-use projects driven by for-sale housing, as opposed to apartments, I guess. Thank you for joining us again. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Ed McKinney, also an architect and urban designer, has worked throughout the U.S. on large-scale private developments, downtown redevelopment, and transit station planning. He is the interim planning director for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. Now, I used words like beige, blocky, bland, sterile, uninspired, ugly to describe the apartment buildings going up around town. But is that fair? Are those your words? Would you use those words? Have you said this to the people who are building these buildings?
I think those words come from people that, you know, drive by, maybe on occasion walk by, and they look up and they see something new and go, wow, where'd that come from? And then they're the ones that use those words. And then they come to me and say those words, and I say, well, let's talk about it.
Well, you know, these are big buildings. As I said, some of them are a city block in diameter or circumference or whatever you want to say, and they're 5 or 6 or 7 stories tall. What else would you do to make them less blocky, less bland?
Well, I think the criticism for me breaks down into two categories. Some of the buildings are ugly. They're just bad. But most of it is urban principles. Some of the buildings are not bad architecturally, but they're really terrible the way they meet the street and the urbanism of the buildings. And that to me is what needs more focus than anything. We're building these buildings so fast. There's so much pressure in the development community and the institutional financial community to get these projects out there and get them built, that we've got to focus on the fact that we're building a city and we're filling in blocks, we're building neighborhoods, we're building streets, we're building sidewalks. And if those streets and sidewalks and neighborhoods are better, then those assets ultimately are better. But it's the urban design, I think, that is where a lot of these projects are failing, and that's where they meet the streets.
We're building a city, and I want to put you on the spot here, Ed McKinney, but you are the interim, and I'll underline that, the interim planning director. Are you going for the job permanently? You don't want the job permanently.
No comment.
Nothing's permanent, Charlotte.
Since we are building a city, obviously all of these things have to go through the planning department, right?
Correct.
For approval. If they're ugly, how are they slipping through?
Well, as David mentioned, absolutely. What's primary for us is the urban environment, the public realm, the street level, making sure that the pedestrian experience in these neighborhoods where these developments are happening are vibrant. We do have tools that help us do that. We have a number of urban design districts in our zoning ordinance that regulate the kinds of things David is talking about to make sure that we get active uses on the street, that we get the relationship between the building and the street right, that we get the design of the sidewalk, the streetscape right. We have a number of tools that help us do that. And certainly those tools need constant rethinking and kind of reinvestigation to make sure that they're really producing the kinds of the community that we want to produce.
So let me jump in. Sometimes those tools become their minimums, and the minimums become standards, especially when they're evaluated by people from out of town. Mm-hmm. I think we have a very strong and a very capable development community and a very talented architectural community in Charlotte. I think some of the worst stuff that's been done in town is when people come from out of town. They get our standards or our minimums, and they compute those into standards, and they build to those standards without looking to see, is this a busy street? Is this a street where retail could flourish? Is this a street where a pedestrian is going to feel comfortable or a residential unit is going to feel comfortable? Mm-hmm. And they don't really go to that level of evaluation. They just fill in the blanks.
Developers are not designing these buildings. Architects right. are designing these right. buildings. So who's at fault here? Is it the architect who is unimaginative or lazy or just has been given a mandate, go to the minimum standard and build that? Or is it the developer saying, use the minimum standard. We don't want to spend any money here.
Well, I wrote this editorial that put the blame on the design community, and that we need to be driving that bus harder. Yes, the developer ultimately makes those decisions, ultimately pays the bill of the architects. The developer is the client and ultimately is in charge. But I think that the architect, it's incumbent upon the architect and the design community to keep pushing these ideas and to push them through the context that the asset will ultimately be more valuable if it's done well. Mm. I think when things are starting to be done as fast as they are now and product is being really cranked out as fast as it can be done, when there's a lot of product out there, the asset that is done better, that has a better street edge, has built-in amenities that aren't like a private film room but more like a public coffee shop, will be the amenities where people want to live. And therefore, the asset will be more valuable and the developer will get it.
Prior to the recession, when home builders were building out in the far-flung suburbs on old farmland and unused land that had been forest land for years, great big companies would come in, home builder companies would come in, and they would build five or six different models of a house, and they build 1,000 of them in these neighborhoods. So they'd paint them all beige because that's what homeowners wanted their house to be. They wanted it to be beige. So you'd look out over these neighborhoods, and you'd see this sea of beige. And some of them were entry-level housing, which I used to call slums in waiting because they weren't very well built in some cases. Now we have this flurry of apartment development in the inner core. These are all being built by different companies. They're not the same company, but they look the same. Why? There's a style emerging.
They have the same formula.
Right. Why?
Because the housing is an increment. It's a kit of parts, and those parts are the same. Everybody lives the same. They all have a balcony. They all have a living room. They all have a dining room. They all have a bedroom. And so it's the same kit of parts. And that kit is driven more by the financial institutions, which dictate how big that apartment is, how many of what type of apartment there is. So although those developers are all different, they're fighting for the same institutional dollars, and they're driven by the same formula. So it's very difficult for the architect. It's very challenging for the architect to create a distinctive look each time out when they're using the exact same kit of parts each time.
But the outside, the exterior elevations could be different materials,
that's what I'm
different
saying.
Shapes.
Yes, yeah.
Why don't they... Why? Why have they graduated to the same look, all these different architects?
I think it's everything goes through trends and style, mm-hmm. and I think we're kind of probably hitting – we've kind of basically hit a rut right now. I think everyone's kind of been doing the same thing so long that there's full rules that they're following, you know. And a lot of it's being driven by the lenders that say, you know, we can only afford 30% brick. The rest of it has to be cheap, you know, concrete panel or plywood or something like that. And so the architects just kind of play these games of, you know, we call it articulation. What's also interesting is Charlotte isn't different from many cities around the country right now. All of these many cities are being inundated mm-hmm. with these these big, unappealing apartments. It's a big trend right now. I think that the ones that are doing better probably have better regulations, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, some more additional talent. And part of what I have done for the past, you know, 24 years, I don't work that much in Charlotte. David does a lot of great work here. But I actually work all over the country and the world.
Right.
And not only do I go visit places and study them, I'm also working in the trenches with the developers, the planning agencies, the elected officials. And, you know, there's a system, operating system, that actually leads communities in a more positive direction or a less positive direction. You know, and I think someone said years ago, you know, cities get the planning they deserve. And I think that what we want to do is encourage people and leaders to actually say, we need to raise the bar here. Because when you see how things are done in other places, Charlotte can do a lot better.
If you look at more mature cities and you travel through them, you'll see blocks or areas of those cities that look similar. Within that block, everything looks similar. And you can usually date them to the 1800s or the early 1900s or a period of time.
Yep.
Are we just not going through that here?
We're going through that now, and I think, for example, when you see a picture of Paris, you know it's Paris. When you see a picture of London, you know it's London. New York, Chicago, San Francisco. I mean, they're really, you know, they're great cities. They have their own character, their own personality. And I think Charlotte, as a kind of a new South boomtown, is struggling to find its identity. The question is whether this era is that identity or not. Mm. I'm not sure. When we have minimum parking standards that force buildings to the first 2 to 8 stories just to be cars behind bars with no street life or very little, or just this percentage formula that you say, you just throw out a percentage formula and say, that's what we're going to do here. And then all of a sudden you look at the building and say, where did that come from? What happened here? Then you know something's really wrong.
Yeah, cars behind bars is a phrase that I attribute to you, and particularly with regard to that building on South Boulevard, which you keep showing pictures of in your PowerPoint presentations.
Poster child, yes.
Yeah, there's a bill. If you're driving out of town on South Boulevard, I think it's just before or just after the Pepto-Bismol building. There is this large apartment complex that it has. The first several stories are parking decks for the people who live above.
Right.
And they have exhaust vans for the exhaust to blow out onto the street. And there are little window openings with bars on them. And that's cars behind bars.
Yep.
What's the alternative to that? Because there's certainly not enough street parking.
It meets the standards. It follows the rules.
Yeah, but what's the alternative?
Because
that project is a great example of urbanism. Architecturally, that project is not that bad. Uh-huh. There's a lot worse projects in town. I mean, it's marginal, but it's not that bad. But the urbanism is terrible. And go back to the standards. I'm sure that that project went to Ed's planning group, which, by the way, are first class, and get it.
Uh-huh.
Our planning staff is all over this idea and gets it. They don't have enough tools to work with. And they were told that they needed to create more active use areas. So the architect drew on his plans active use areas along a dead space. The contractor gave those plans to a signage, and now there's a sign on the side of that building that says active use area, and it's totally dead.
That's David Furman, architect, and Tom Lowe is here as well. He's an architect, and Ed McKinney is an architect. He's also the interim planning director for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area. If you're concerned about appearance and function of some of the new developments popping up around Charlotte, let us know now at charlottetalks@wfae.org or on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Culture and Heritage Museums, hosting a concert by the Jerry Douglas Band with an American resonator guitar and lap steel player and record producer Friday at the McKelvey Center. Tickets at chmuseums.org/Southern Sound Series. At the end of the month, Charlotte Talks and NPR will be exploring what voters across the country think about the 2016 election. As a part of that, we will host a voter roundtable, and we want you to be part of it. If you're interested in participating along with other listeners, all you have to do is email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org and tell us a little bit about yourself. And we hope that we hear from you soon at that email address. Tomorrow on this program, we recap and analyze President Obama's last State of the Union address, which is tonight. NPR will cover that, as will WFAE tonight at 9 o'clock. And we'll also look at the GOP response as written and delivered by South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley with a bunch of political scientists. That's tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration is deporting Central American immigrants in raids nationwide that began last month. What's behind the new wave of deportations and reactions from communities and political leaders?
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about recent development in Charlotte and the ongoing plethora of apartment buildings and other buildings, large buildings being built, which is literally changing the look of the city, and some say not for the better. Some of those people who are the sum are with us around this table. Tom Lowe, architect, director of Civic by Design. They have a forum tonight at 5:30 at the Levine Museum of the New South about this exact topic. David Furman is also here. He's an architect. And Ed McKinney, an architect, is also the interim planning director for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. We'll grill him in just a couple of seconds here. Are most of the buildings that are going up that you find troubling apartment buildings, or are they other kinds of buildings as well?
I think for me, most of them are apartments. Okay. And again, it goes back to the formula. Back 10 years ago when there were condo buildings being done, a condo development could be smaller. It could be – you could do 12 units. You could do 40 units. Apartment buildings are driven by this institutional formula, so they get to be 200 and 300
Why?
Units because they have to get out that much money, and the efficiencies to manage those projects have to be bigger to have all this on-site amenities and management, et cetera. And so it really changes the whole texture of how a neighborhood gets developed. You can't do small little infill projects anymore. They end up taking up this whole block. And because they are so urban, they are so visible.
Which is more troubling to the three of you, the look of these buildings, the way they put them on the street, the lack of street amenities, et cetera, the construction materials being used? What's more troubling to you about all of this?
I would say and I think we had a topic with the forum called the polarized public realm. Mm-hmm. And basically it's how the buildings meet the street, which is our, you know, is our outdoor room, our public spaces for the city. And when you turn your back on the public realm, or you prioritize things like garage doors over front porches, or developers think they can get one more unit if they just, you know, put blank walls and garage doors without thinking about how to contribute to the public realm. And then the regulations don't talk about form and the positioning of housing and mixed use on the property. Then you have problems.
Now you're talking about single family
I would say there are two other very important issues, and that is where you have infill and historic neighborhoods like Cherry, like Third Ward, which some people and people at the city have said this, they're too far gone at this point to even think about. And I just like shudder when I think about that. You go down to Third Ward now, where I lived for 4 years, and there's streets of just garage doors with these very hip looking buildings. But in terms of the public realm, they're miserable.
They're too far gone. That's an interesting phrase. And we've been talking for years about the downtown core. One of its deficits is the lack of retail and on-street a streetscape, because mostly it's just blank walls that you walk down. If you're walking down College Street, it's abysmal.
Well, that's
College and Church were kind of alleys.
Exactly.
They were built as alleys to support all the buildings on Tryon
Street. We've known this, and we've been talking about it for years, and now we're building all these new structures that are falling into that same pattern. How can that be, Ed?
We have great examples. So we talk about Uptown. Tryon Street is a great success example for the city of Charlotte. It's got one of the best urban downtown main streets you'll find. We have regulations that got us to that. We've got retail requirements and ground floor design requirements and streetscape requirements that built that. I think the question now, and to your question earlier about what's most important for us, from a city's perspective, is the public realm and making sure that the buildings and the development create the environment, the pedestrian environment, that activity on the street, and that cohesiveness to the neighborhood that's vital. We can do that. We've seen that example in Tron and Uptown. Certainly, there's lots of places now where the question is, where do we want to extend that kind of commitment? In transit stations, in other activity centers. I think the debate and the discussion for us as a community is, let's take that kind of success and adapt it to the context and decide where we want to extend that level of commitment and do that from a public policy standpoint and have a strong dialogue with the community about what are the values that we want to portray in other places.
Aside from dry cleaners and beauty salons and barber shops and restaurants, what would you advocate putting in these places? Because bricks and mortar retail is suffering because of online retail. So as online continues to grow, and it's going to grow, what are you going to put in? Even if you have these spaces, you don't want vacant storefronts. What are you going to put in?
Technology is a fantastic thing. One of the things that – just think about it. The technology has allowed us to take our computers out of these kind of windowless, sterile rooms and walk out onto your front porch and sit there. And so it's all about quality of life and experience. The cities that I mentioned before where I've worked – that people love to go to and move there. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones they call them the creative class cities. The young people just go there. They choose a city and then they just go find a job. Mm-hmm. Are the ones that are actually doing it really, really well. The experience here is mixed. There are two places. One, if you go around our Time Warner Arena, most of the new buildings there are following these minimum parking standards. That basically says that if you're going to build something, you have to accommodate a certain amount of parking on your property. So if you walk around, and this is the motto of the American Institute of Architects right now, they say, look up. That's their, you know, like that's what we do, you look up. If you look up, the first 8 stories of most of those buildings are cars behind bars. That's what we're getting. And I think that what we have to think about is, well, now that young people are not interested in driving. They're not interested in having cars. They'd rather invest their money in living in a great urban place. Mm-hmm. What are we going to do with all these buildings that are basically probably parking in the next decks. 10 years are all going to be obsolete? They're all going to have – they'll probably lose value compared to what's going to be coming, which I think is going to be much better. So I think from an investment point of view, we really need to think about things like minimum parking standards. That's ridiculous. You know, for the 21st century.
I hope we're getting to a tipping point, and I think this conversation we're having today and the fact that we're even having this conversation is pushing us towards that, that this topic is on everybody's mind. It's not just architects and developers. The general community is talking about it big time. And for it to get to that point, I think elevates the consciousness of the designers and the developers to try harder. Mm. And I think that South End is a good example. South End is now starting to fill in with retail. There's apartment projects along Camden that are putting retail on the ground floor, and it's filling up and filling in. And as Tom says, it doesn't have to necessarily be mainstream retail. It just engages the public, and it becomes a place where people want to be. If there's not a minimal sidewalk out in front of a building, if it's expanded, there's a mini plaza or something, it becomes a place where venues can spill out on and people want to be, and it ultimately enhances the value of that asset. And that is the tipping point to start getting developers and financial institutions to drive that point harder.
Ed McKinney, David Furman said a minute ago that he praised the people in the planning department and said that they get it. Is there an urgency, not only within the planning department, but within the people who hire the people and give the money to the planning department, that we need to get on the right path here?
Absolutely. We these kinds of issues are in front of City Council monthly as we go through development rezoning and approval discussions about development that's coming along the line, down the pike. And so there is strong discussion and debate from City Council about the quality of the places that we're creating really pushing us as a staff and as a city to really have those discussions with developers and make sure that we've got the right tools. You know, David mentioned, just to give you a little bit of history, I mean, we talk about South End and just think about the last 10 years. We, 10 years ago, we didn't even have the right zoning tool in place. We now have a transit-oriented development district, zoning district, that governs development. We have, in our area plan for South End, discussions and commitments to where we want retail to occur, and then that commitment is tied to the zoning district. So, as David mentioned, we're starting to see coming out of the ground some of the the fruits of those regulations. Can we be doing better? Absolutely. And should we extend that commitment to other places? Yes.
Well, the reason I asked about the urgency is because Deborah Campbell was the planning director, and she left that job in 2014 to become the assistant city manager, and they had hoped to have a permanent replacement in place by, I think, May of last year, then by the end of last year, and you are still in the job. I don't know whether you want the job. It's none of my business, but why
must
are they
be doing a great job.
Must be doing a great job. Why are they taking so long to find a permanent planning director? And until they do, can you really move forward at full speed?
We can. I mean, to answer the second part of that question, we are moving full speed. We've got commitment from the city council to move forward on our new zoning ordinance update, and we're doing that. We have engaged our consultant. We're having discussions now with the Planning Commission, and we'll be really kicking that off in full force this spring. I think the commitment from the city manager's office, from the city council, is to make sure that we've got the right resources and staff in place and have the right experience to do the things that we need to do. So we're not waiting. We're moving forward, and there's lots of great opportunity, I think, ahead of us to engage the community about these kinds of issues and make sure that they're front and center as we talk about the update of our zoning ordinance.
To keep pushing the developers and architects as they come in as to what the expectations are, how they need to fulfill those expectations to be part of the community.
Well, you mentioned not having enough tools or the right tools, and now you're getting some of the right tools. And by that, I would assume you mean regulations or zoning requirements. Who makes those requirements? The city council, the planning commission with the okay of the city council? Is that part of the problem? Is the other part of the problem, you have, given the vast amount of growth we're experiencing right now, do you have enough people to handle all the work you have to do?
Well, let's just talk about the issues ahead of us. I mean, we're a city that has 300 square miles, so the diversity of places that we're dealing with and that our regulations have to cover is pretty dramatic. So we've got to be careful about the way we tweak and adjust our ordinance to make sure it really applies to all the diversity of places that we have. We have tools, and again, just thinking about the last 10 years of things that we've done, we've got a very unique subdivision ordinance that governs making sure that we get streets and blocks and connectivity. We have a very unique urban design street regulations that is nationally known that really sets the stage for the kind of public investment we make in our streets. And then we do have these unique design districts, the TOD, the Transit-Oriented Development District, our ordinance that covers uptown, our ordinance that covers mixed-use development. We have some tools, but they're really relatively young. And we're a city, as we've been talking about, that's sort of going through a maturity now that requires us to kind of reinvest in those tools and make sure that they're doing the things that we want them to do.
And yet some of the construction that we're complaining about this morning is falling into that transit-oriented development district, which I'm assuming is along the rail line in South End, and there are thousands of apartments going. It's unbelievable. If you haven't, there are people who live in Ballantyne and North Charlotte who never go to South End. Take a Saturday and just drive down there and go back into areas of South End that used to be godforsaken wastelands. Well, now they're godforsaken apartments. There's nothing but apartments. It's unbelievable. So if we have these special development areas, why are we complaining about what's going up there?
Well, I think the evolution of things like zoning is really interesting. And again, this is what I've studied most of my career. Years ago, we all left the city and went out into the suburbs. And then when we decided to come back to the city, we brought back our suburban zoning. And everyone said, this is horrible. All these beautiful buildings that we have, the beautiful ones that are left, are illegal now. So I think the first step was to actually take zoning that actually said, let's at least allow for good things to happen so people like David Furman can actually do a decent building. Mm-hmm. And he's done that. Now, what's happened, though, is just allowing it isn't enough anymore because, again, the investors have come in and said, we figured out, our lawyers and our land use attorneys, so forth, have figured out how to meet the minimum standards. And basically they were written in a way that I think the planning department was taken off guard. I said, we're shocked. We thought we had it covered, but we don't. These are because people have figured out how to get through the loopholes.
Do most cities have higher standards than we have?
So, most cities, I would say that more cities have standards, but you can also go to cities that, say, the last generation of development is a lot different from Charlotte, a lot nicer.
Are we behind the curve because we were taken by surprise by the growth and the rapidity of the growth?
Well, I think we didn't get we weren't proactive. And during the recession, you know, some cities actually decided to retool their zoning so that they were ready when we came out of it, and we haven't done that yet. And the idea that, you know, 5 years from now we'll have it all figured out, you know, that's going to be after the fact. This building boom is going to be done, and we're going to be stuck with, you know, what we've got. That's not a way to make a great city.
So if developers and builders and architects are taking advantage of just using the minimum standards – if we raised the minimum standards to something that would solve this problem, what would these new buildings look like? What would the difference be?
You know, I'm trying to think whether people – I can't fathom that people conscientiously move towards a minimum standard. I think that they just do it out of habit. That's that they read the document. There's the setback. They build to the setback. And therefore, it gets back to my thesis of people just aren't trying hard enough. I mean, I think there's a talent and there's a skill level to be able to make these things happen. But people have got to realize, or the designers have got to focus on thinking through that process and not just going through the motions, not just staring at a computer screen all day and going home at 5 o'clock because my kid's got to go to soccer, but really think about the implications of what they're doing. They're building a city, mm-hmm. and that there are implications to that. And I really think that's true. I mean, I don't think people are conscientiously trying to build crappy stuff. I can't imagine that. Yeah.
I think it's mixed because this is a scenario. A great architect designs a building that has a really wonderful active streetscape around the perimeter.
Right.
The developer, who's savvy, comes in and says, why are you building all this active, you know, why are you lining this parking garage, which I think is going to be more expensive, when we don't have to? The rule here says only 45%. Take that out.
Right.
And the architect gulps and says, okay, I'll do that.
So if we had less lazy architects and we had higher standards –
You took it a little step further than I did.
I'll tell you, okay.
Now, less, David Furman calls out architects as being lazy.
If we had less complacency in the architectural community.
I think there's an indifference, yeah.
And if we had higher standards, what would these buildings look like?
I would say, I just want to comment because, again, I travel a lot and I work a lot in other places. And so I know how things happen. Like in places like Vancouver, in places like San Diego, in places even like Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Are you going to say the Portland word as well?
Well, Portland, the Pearl District, you know, okay. is great. And part of it has to do with things like, you know, good bones, which basically means block structure, lots of, you know, smaller blocks. It talks about, you know, there are rules, like Vancouver's planning director said, here are 6 rules that we want everyone to follow, and if mm-hmm. you follow these – we're probably going to get 85 to 90% of a great city. And if you go to the waterfront in Vancouver, they have small blocks. They have beautiful towers. They have mixed use, mixed choice of housing on every block. Every single facade and ground plane has a front door to the unit that opens out or mixed use. The streets are traffic calmed. Just lots of great things.
I want to come back to that because you use a lot of examples of that in your PowerPoint presentation about how all these things come together, and we'll talk about what that means and how that works on a human scale when we come back and share some of the comments that people have been making as we've been talking. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the UNC Charlotte College of Arts and Architecture, presenting experimental filmmaker Peter Hutton and a screening of 4 shorts January 16th at UNC Charlotte Center City. Details at arts.uncc.edu. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, dedicated to promoting informed and engaged communities and committed to helping public radio advance quality journalism in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org. Well, the Obama administration is deporting Central American immigrants in raids nationwide that began earlier this month. So on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, they'll talk about what's behind this new wave of deportations and get reaction from communities and political leaders around the country as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
Tonight, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's final State of the Union address. I'm Audie Cornish. Join me as we hear reaction from Congress, the official Republican response, and in-depth analysis with NPR reporters from the campaign trail in Iowa to the halls of Capitol Hill. It's special coverage of President Obama's last State of the Union address from NPR News.
Join us tonight, beginning at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about how you design a city to make it prettier than what we're going through right now. Okay. Less complacency. More laziness. No, the other way around. David Furman is here. He's an architect. Tom Lowe. They're all architects. Tom Lowe is with us. He's director of Civic by Design, and Ed McKinney is the interim planning director. Let's get back to these cities that do it well. And you mentioned Vancouver, and I've seen your maps on your PowerPoint presentation, Tom, that illustrate this first as a drawing and then in reality with photographs. Mm-hmm. And it really is very, very, very apparent what you're talking about when you actually see it. If you don't see it, it's hard to visualize. It's hard to imagine how these big cities with these tall towers can be any friendlier than what Charlotte is. And what you've shown us through these drawings and through these photographs is that, as you said, front doors open onto the street. You've got cut-throughs in the middle of blocks, so you can go from one block to another. The blocks are small. They're like, what, 200-something feet?
Smaller increments.
There are open spaces scattered in amongst these buildings every couple of blocks, so you have an opportunity for nature, for greenery. It just makes it human.
Yes. This afternoon, this evening at the forum, I'll be showing those examples for people that are interested for the visuals. The Common Market in South End, mm-hmm. I think is probably the coolest place we have in Charlotte. And it just happened
to
be.
It's going.
It came out of, basically the spaces between buildings mm-hmm. created this wonderful courtyard. When it's redeveloped in a higher density version with things like minimum parking standards, you go from a large block that has lots of cool little passages going through it to basically, plopping down a loading dock in a parking garage and wrapping it around it. And, that's a downward trade that we really shouldn't risk right now. We should have a coordinated parking mm-hmm. plan for South End that allows people to walk two blocks or less to parking, but not to kill the best space we have in Charlotte.
Ed, how is this happening?
How is it happening? So
why is this happening?
the pace of growth that we're seeing, particularly in South End, it's been sort of unprecedented for us. It's been a good example of the investment we've made in transit and the benefit we're getting from that. So the challenges we face are good problems to have. We've got lots to do to strengthen the things that we're doing. We have an opportunity, I believe, to really learn from the lessons of the last 10 years, particularly in the station areas, to strengthen our tools to get better development. The key there, again, using examples of other cities, I would say when you look at the details of some of the form-based regulations we have in our current districts, many of them are very parallel to what you'll see in other cities. It's a matter of making sure that we've apply that commitment in all the places that we want to apply it, and that we get aggressive about the streets and the places that we want to truly get the right form and use. The other point I'll make here that's, I think, unique to Charlotte is the kind of the dialogue we have in our area plan process. We have a kind of a unique process where we really work with the communities at a smaller scale to discuss the kind of qualities they want to see in their neighborhoods, to make sure that we get the context right so that the decisions we make about which streets are important, the decisions we make about the intensity and the scale of development are really based on the context.
The city is planning to rewrite its zoning laws. Has the planning for that begun? What will it entail? What do you envision it to be when we come through the other side of that?
We envision essentially a complete update of our zoning ordinance.
The current laws were written in the 80s and 90s?
Well,
right?
The ordinance dates all the way back to our essentially our original founding as a planning commission and our planning powers, but it's been updated. The most recent kind of comprehensive update was back in the 90s. We regularly update it through amendments to kind of tweak and fix the things that need to be tweaked. As I mentioned, we've added districts in the last 10 years. You know, when we implemented transit, we made sure we had a zoning district, transit-oriented development, that could apply to those station areas. So it's not a static document.
It is. There is an impression among many in Charlotte that developers get whatever the hell they want. And I have a question about that. If you raise standards, won't that raise construction costs? And won't those construction costs, particularly in the world of apartment developments, be passed on to renters in the form of higher rent? And rent is already about $1,000 a month in many of these places. That's locking out a lot of people.
You know, that's part of the dialogue we need to have. I think certainly David probably has a better perspective on the financing, the kind of the ramifications of things. But that's some of the pushback we'll get in some of these the raising of the bar to make sure that the ramifications of these things aren't overly dramatic to the financing.
Right. I think there are some enhancements that would make the projects and construction more expensive and the development more expensive. But I think a lot of what we're talking about is simply design. And I think a lot of design doesn't necessarily have to be expensive. You can create better spaces. You can create better facades. You can use different type. You can use the same materials in different ways just to be creative without necessarily raising the expense on things.
And from an architect's point of view, the ability to be creative, is that attractive to most architects?
I would hope so.
Yeah, that's why they're doing it, right?
I would hope so, sure.
Let me share with you some things that have come in on various forms of social media while we've been talking. Joan in Indian Land, South Carolina, please ask your guests about the fire safety of what appear to be a large number of stick-built apartment structures, 3 and 4 levels high, with no obvious firewalls. What requirements exist, and how are they followed in these new buildings? I asked this question of another panel about these stick-built buildings with no obvious firewalls, and I was told that although there are no brick firewalls, there are codes that require sprinkler systems and certain materials be used, et cetera, and that makes them safe.
Yeah, I think the Observer did an article, and they tried to tie together the whole notion of a design weakness with structural weakness and fire safety weakness. And I think that's hype. I don't think there are any – it's not a safety issue. We're talking about a design issue here. These buildings are totally safe. The standards that are out there have totally been vetted, and they're as safe
and
as
they're
any
using
buildings
work,
around.
They're using wood instead of steel because it's
well,
cheaper?
Yeah, sure. Wood's cheaper, but steel melts. I mean, a steel building's not any more safe than a wood building. They all have the same types of sprinkler systems in them, and the same types. And steel, the steel is fire protected with insulation, and wood it's fire protected with insulation and various layers of treatment.
Hallie on Facebook writes, "These are abysmal cardboard monstrosities with little toothpick balconies." James on Facebook, "Charlotte needs to transition to form-based code, which regulates how the buildings relate to the surrounding neighborhood and human scale, rather than regulating based on the use of the building as they do now. This would solve a lot of the problems with the ugly McPartments being thrown together all over the city." Would you agree with that?
I totally agree with that, and the reason why I do is because I have a lot of experience with form-based codes, but I've also seen them perform really well in other cities.
Okay. Paul on Facebook, "Developers of apartment complexes should be required to keep and manage the property instead of selling them off to Wall Street, which bundles them together and sells them as REITs, which will collapse as there are too many apartments built, creating the next big bubble. It's not how bad they look now. It's how bad they will look in 20 years. I had a question about that, too, because a lot of these apartment developers are not developing these buildings and building them to own them themselves. They're building them to sell and also wrap into these investment portfolios. How is that impacting all of this? Is that part of the reason they're gravitating toward the sameness that we see?
It's the investment groups that are funding all of these have formulas, just like David said.
Right.
And I think basically there's a certain minimum number they expect, a certain construction cost. And I think that some cities actually have a better way of managing, and some of the designers have a better way of creating more long-term positive projects. And I think one of the key things, for example, is if you – Charlotte has larger blocks, 400 by 400, mm-hmm. but a lot of places, especially our industrial areas, which are basically transforming now, don't even have a block structure. And so when you have – David said it's economies of scale – the last thing a developer wants anyone to tell them is that we want you to create a block structure. He says, what do you mean I have to put in streets? I just want to drag and drop in a bunch of apartments, right. And the more I can get in, the better. And, you know, firewalls, well, you know, it's 1,000 units all with, you know, all connected together with wood sticks. Let's break it. We should break things down. Other cities do this. It's very simple. And, in fact, once you start doing it, it's not more expensive. It's basically marketable.
Are you talking about doing that in the planning department?
We're doing a number of those things. So again, the subdivision ordinance I mentioned, our street design guidelines require street connectivity and block structure. We have included form-based regulations in the districts I mentioned before. The transit-oriented district itself, more or less, is founded on a set of form-based principles. So again, we have room to invest in those tools to make sure that they're really producing the communities that we want. But I think we're already beginning to do some of the best practices that are available to us.
Turk on Twitter says, if anyone thinks these new wholesale, ugly, unimaginative buildings are pretty, they are being paid by the builders. Varian on Twitter, we know Charlotte needs stricter zoning ordinance to direct development, but that will take years. What action can we take in the meantime?
Well, I think the positive news here is that our city is growing, and we have the opportunity to fill in the blanks in our city and build a great city. Mm-hmm. And this growth and the need for housing for our community is part of that. You know, as these projects start infilling and they start competing with each other, it's my hope that this elevated dialogue will make people and force people to be more distinctive, to have an edge in the marketplace. And that they will, that the market condition will take that over, and that people will, that the institutional investor will understand that if his asset is better and mm-hmm. is adhering to better design principle, it will be a more valuable asset.
So you're saying it's just like single family homes. One of the things you look for when you're going to buy a single family home is curb appeal.
Sure.
You're saying that buildings that look good, that serve a certain need, that right. make people feel comfortable being around them, will be better for
be more successful.
Be more successful.
And then people will gravitate towards that model.
But David Walters, UNC Charlotte Professor Emeritus, retired director of the university's Master of Urban Design Program, says that Charlotte is known nationally and internationally among developers for being a place where it's easy to build, and that top developers don't want to come here because there's no appreciation for good work.
I don't think that's true. I think there are top developers in Charlotte right now. I think developers are flocking here from all over the country because they realize what an incredible community this is to be a part of, and they want to be a part of it. We've just got to elevate their program to that the expectation to be a part of our community is do your part to make our community better. Through design.
Let me go back to some comments from emails and Facebook and Twitter. Charlotte has no soul. The never-ending tearing down of older buildings and putting up cookie-cutter buildings is depressing. Combine that with uncontrolled urban sprawl is making this place the Wonder Bread city.
Bland, right?
Well, we build bodies 12 ways.
Well,
bodies 12
bland
ways.
Buildings aren't bad. I think, you know, from an urban design point of view, simple buildings that create, some people call it urban fabric, mm-hmm. you know, all these kind of terms that we use. But sometimes buildings do need to create very plain walls to outdoor rooms. Mm-hmm. But the buildings need to be interesting, and they need to be coherent. And we don't necessarily have that when we've got, you know, 2 to 8 stories of cars behind bars on a lot of buildings and a lot of spaces.
But isn't there a way to disguise that?
Well,
to put retail on the first
problem.
Story of that?
Yeah, that's a very superficial solution when you actually – and, you know, unfortunately, the arts community gets engaged kind of after the fact, you know. Come do a big mural on my building because it's so ugly.
Well, I mean, you're showing a slide tonight of a current city street here in Charlotte and a drawing of what you think could improve it. And among the simple solutions that I've noticed as a layperson on that drawing is simply putting an awning up on the side of the building.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes the building look, I don't know why, friendlier, nicer, more pleasant to be around. Ben emails, are there any areas in Center City that are getting it right? Or anywhere for that matter.
I think there are good projects out there. We tend to focus on some of the ones that are visible and not good. But, yeah, there are good projects out there. There's good projects in South End. There's project in South End that has taken its leasing office and all its amenities, and you don't see those from the street. You have to find them. There's there are venues on the corner. There's a venue on the rail trail where it has no visibility from any streets. And if you go by there on a beautiful afternoon, there'll be people everywhere, and it's very, very successful. There's buildings that have very long facades along South Boulevard, but they're not total facades. They're broken down into small courtyards so that the units are on these little courtyards and orient towards the street. So it creates a much, much better streetscape without necessarily focusing on commercial.
We only have about a minute and a half left here, but we've talked all about these big, big, big apartment complexes. This is also something that's affecting neighborhoods because of infill development. And you talk about making new development in these areas complementary and not losing sight of these of the fact that these are neighborhoods that have a feel and look about them.
That's right. And, you know, when you put three architects in a room and then ask them to solve all the problems, they'll solve it with what they know, architecture. But I think that beyond buildings, we have to think about things which really even is more of Charlotte's image, which are beautiful landscape trees, trees, beautiful trees, and a development just clear-cut, probably 4 to 5 dozen beautiful trees and cherry, putting back really nice houses, but just basically destroy the character. So you don't know whether you're in.
Isn't it safer to do that? Because if you're going to run the dump trucks and other vehicles over tree roots, you could kill the
there
trees.
There are ways to do it, and I'll show examples tonight of projects that have done it, have really done worked around trees and made them better. One last comment I would say is that not only the rules and regulations, which is kind of a stick important, but there needs to be a carrot here. And I think that people like David and Ed, myself, we need to get in a room together. We need to actually create a culture, raise the culture here. And the way to do that is to actually come together in a place that does that. And we don't have that here.
Tom Lowe, architect and the director of Civic by Design. David Furman, architect, and Ed McKinney, architect and interim planning director for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department. Thank you all for the hour.
Thank you.
And none of you are ugly, by the way. You're all good looking.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins